top 1% sales reps. A lot of people have heard of the 80-20 rule, Pareto's principle, where 20% of the reps sell 80% of the sales. Oh, yeah, top 20%. 80-20, I'm in the 20. To which I say, big deal. Being in the top 20% of a sales team, the way sales is a profession, is more an embarrassment than an accomplishment. And here's why. The top 80% of the people on the sales team don't even belong in sales. They have other jobs or not even focusing on the job they have. They're looking for other work. They don't listen or attend training. They don't listen to trainings they do. They're interlopers. You know, they're in there. They used to be web designers or in sales temporarily until they find a quote-unquote real job. They're lazy. They don't make calls, and on it goes. I mean, it's not that hard to beat 4 out of 5 other people in sales. If you're an actual professional who wants to be in sales and you're really working hard and you're learning every day and you're becoming better and better every day by applying a good training process, you will absolutely, by a matter of course, fall into the top 20. A good rep can walk in a new sales team and by default end up in the top 20 just by being a real salesperson as to oppose a hanger on. Anyway. A little bit more challenging to say, well, I'm in the top 10%. Huh? That's pretty good. Now you've weeded out half of the people who are actually in sales. You beat half of them. A top 10% really translates to about the top 50%. You're in the top half of salespeople. Because I'm saying 80%, I'm not even going to use the word salespeople. I'm going to use the people who are holding down chairs. But the top 1%, now that's an accomplishment, because really the top 1% puts you in the top 5% of true salespeople, 1 out of 20. Hope I don't confuse you with the math. But what is the top 1%? The top 1%, if you took the 80-20 rule and applied it to the, you have the top 20. If you take the 80-20 rule and apply it to the top 20, at 80%, the top 20% of the top 20 is 1/5 of the top 20, which is 4%. If you took the top 20% of that 4%, what you're saying is that top 1/5 of the top 4% is 0.8%, which in other words is to put you comfortably into the top 1%. So you're in the, actually it's the 80-20-20-20 rule, which as far as I know, I invented. Anybody else ever hear of anyone else? There's not that many math people out there, I guess, in sales. I don't know what it is. But it's a pretty simple calculation. So if you have a team of 100 people, 80 would be in the bottom 80, 20 would be in the top, and only one would be in the top 1%. By definition, 100 people, one rep, top 1%. The middle class in America is becoming extinct. The reason being is that the income disparities are growing more and more high incomes, more and more people getting pushed out of the middle. And the reason they're getting pushed out of the middle is starting in the 80s, companies started to downsize. They became lean and mean because they had different economic pressures. They started getting rid of people, and they started looking for cheaper ways to do things. And eventually what happened is they started going to south, like the industrial north in the Midwest, started opening plants out in Nashville and Memphis and, you know, outside of Atlanta and so on. They go down south where the labor was cheaper. And for a while, they get a competitive advantage. Then they said, well, maybe we should keep going. So they ended up in the maquiladoras of Mexico and the industrial zones just south of the border. The Mexican government had a free trade zone, and they allowed companies to go down there and employ cheap Mexican labor at under $1 an hour. So en masse, they went down to Mexico. And they kept going down to South America. They said, well, what else can we do? All right, well, we could, just like initially, too, the companies in California would open up call centers in Omaha, other low-cost areas. They started going into Ireland, which was, well, in Europe, had the least developed economy, had the lowest per capita income of all of Europe. You want to venture what one of the highest ones is right now? It's Ireland. They opened up all those plants. They bumped everybody up in the standard of living. Then they started doing the Far East. They had, you know, Japan at first, and then it was Taiwan, Singapore, Malaysia. And then, of course, China. India, for programming, if that was huge, they took all the programming jobs and shipped them off to India. Now they got Eastern Europe and all over the world now, there's different people who do IT work because it's just code, it's just paperwork. Anything that could be outsourced is being outsourced. Just basically made everybody in the United States compete with everybody in the world instead of just their neighboring towns. It used to be you versus the other guy. Now it's you versus 500 Chinese for those jobs. So General Motors took Delphi Auto Parts and spun it off. Then they bankrupted it, and they got rid of all their $30-$35 an hour union workers. Now they're paying 10. The airlines were doing it in the 80s. They were having two-tier structures for pilots. Pilots used to make big money, 120 grand a year back in the 60s. Huge money. Then they went two-tier where any new pilots would come in making 50 grand a year. And then they keep restructuring these businesses, and pretty soon we'll be doing high-paid pilot jobs. On doctors, used to make a lot of money. Now they have DRG, Diagnostic Related Group. In other words, they're paying doctors flat rate for a procedure and nothing more. The insurance will not reimburse past a certain point. It's no more blank checks for doctors. So basically, they sucked all the money out of medicine. The only money left in medicine is laser eye surgery and plastic surgery and aesthetic dentistry. Everything else is a money loser. A lot of these guys, my doctor, after all these years, 30, 40 years, is basically they merged into a medical group. Now he's an employee. He's not an independent doctor anymore. He works for a corporation. He's got a job. But they do all the paperwork and build the insurance. I couldn't keep up with it. Well, I'm sure you've heard a lot of this. I've made it a point to systematically study, nickel and dimed, like tons of different books about this, about the disappearing middle class. Why? Because it directly affects me what I do. I see all these people out here with college degrees, and a lot of times they took jobs that aren't there anymore, so they're looking for something. So a lot of these people end up in sales, unfortunately. Some of them actually can do pretty well. What it's done, though, is this. When there's a booming economy, like during the Internet era, late 1990s, early 2000s, they were driving up the wages where even just young kids right out of graduate school, MBA school, were getting outrageous salaries to be business development pros and all this other stuff. A lot of easy money. All this venture capital was raised. They built up this huge bubble economy. It would take you about, at the peak there, about 2001, 2000, it would take about $330,000 of wages to be considered top 1% wage earner in the United States of America, according to the IRS. 330 grand. In bad years, all you'd have to do is make about 280,000. And you would be in the top 1%. Right now, if you were making about $280,000, $300,000, you're definitely going to be in the top 1% because a lot of that easy money is, we have these booms periodically in the economy. Now we're in a major real estate, collapse, mortgage and collapse. It's pushing people out of these paying jobs. So it's becoming harder and harder to stay middle class. So what used to be, you used to have to, in the olden days, in the 60s and the 70s, you'd go to work, you'd work 40 hours. Now, if you just paid reasonably good attention to your life and had a job, you were comfortably middle class, comfortably. Now, it's extremely difficult to be middle class. And what is middle class? I'll just tell you, let me tell you my personal story on how I grew up. My dad had various jobs, worked his way up. He was a manufacturer's rep, and then he wanted to open up his own company. He was making aircraft parts. He was repping them, so he decided to go into business and kept two other jobs, so he had two or three jobs plus his business. So if during the lean years, when early years, they could keep the place afloat. My mother had five kids and never worked outside the home. Once he got some traction in his business, he became pretty well off later, but during the era that I was growing up, it was pretty much just kind of like a middle class thing. He would have, a new car, and he'd switch that one. And we always had two relatively new cars, had a decent house in a safe area with nice schools. We'd go on vacations a couple weeks here, a week there, had a college fund, had a savings account, had life insurance and health insurance, and were able to pay the bills. They weren't living off of mortgages and credit cards. Second mortgages and credit cards, they were just making money and paying the bills. And that's how most of us, our parents lived, if you were middle class, in the 60s and into the 70s, where it started getting more tricky. Does that ring a bell? And that was with one person working. How many people do you know right now who can comfortably have one person work, have a new car, have a decent house in a nice area, not a rent, just their own own home in a nice area. Kids go to good schools. They have a college fund, a retirement fund. You know what I mean? Take vacations. Basically, just have a decent life. They're not rich. I'm not talking about Cadillacs or BMWs in the driveway. I'm not talking about an 8,000 square foot house. Just a nice house with working 40 hours a week with one person who's not a doctor or a pilot or, you know, that anybody could deal with it being a plumber back then or just have a basic, anybody could have did basically that with any reasonably good job. I mean, any reasonably good job. The house would have got bigger, smaller, the cars, whatever. But basically, most people, for a while there, after World War II, there was a sweet spot in the calendar where you'd want to be born, right? During that one period of time, you were able to maintain a middle-class lifestyle. It was a little trickier before that because then you had the war, and before that you had the Great Depression, which was really bad, right? So people thought, of course, that America would be on top forever. They had a dominant position going out of World War II, because they were the only person standing with an intact economy. Nobody bombed us over here. We did all the bombs somewhere else. So we ended up on top of the game. Europe was pretty much devastated. We were the only one with a standing economy. We had to rebuild everybody else's economy. So we had a temporary advantage, and that temporary advantage is now gone. It was just a matter of time till the other countries monkey see, monkey do. Technology can't. Once you let the genie out of the bottle, the genie's out of the bottle. You know, if this guy can build a jet engine, someone else can build a jet engine. You know, this guy could do a transistor, someone else could do a transistor. It's just sand. You know what I'm saying? It's not that complicated. Actually, it is, but some of the, you know, you steal yourself an engineer and you could do it too. So now we got all kinds of industrializing economies, and they're all competing now on a world stage. That adds to the total wealth, but it makes the situation much trickier for the people caught in the middle. Is everybody following what I'm saying so far? So what I'm saying right now is that before, a top 1%er would have been a doctor, a lawyer, a business owner, you know what I mean? Someone who was had an extraordinary success, and they would be like upper middle class. They would have a really prestigious home in the most prestigious suburbs, elaborate houses, very expensive cars, European vacations, summer homes, private schools for the kids. You know what I'm saying? And that's what doctors live like and pilots. They had money. The top 1% wage earners back then were rich. And the vast majority were middle class. Now, here's what I'm proposing to you. If you're not in the top 1%, which is only $300,000 a year, what does $300,000 a year buy you today versus 1965? If you're in a city like San Francisco or New York or L.A., you're only talking about what? $25,000 a month, gross, before taxes. Now, when you start paying taxes off of that, you're probably going to be down to at least 20, and possibly lower, depending on how well you could shelter your income. But let's say you're only paying, you know, a little bit. You're down to 20 grand a month. 20 grand a month, right? Now, if you bought a home a long time ago, great, and your house payments are under 1,000. But if you have to go into these areas now, like in Mill Valley where I live, you want to buy a decent house, it's well over $1 million. Even in the down market, house prices haven't dropped much yet. And I did that once. It's $7,200 a month. There's your house payment. Okay? So for a lot of people, unless you're like bought in, you were vested already because you've been around for a long time, you don't have to worry about house prices. For a lot of people, $20,000 ain't going to go that far. It's certainly not going to make you rich. You'll be comfortable, though. You'll be middle class. Within the top 1%. And by the way, the top 5%, I think it drops all the way down to like 150, 160 in the top 5%. It's not linear. It drops off quickly. I think it was like $120,000, it puts you in the top 10%. Can you imagine that? $110,000 a month puts you in the top 10% wage earners in the country. Gross, $10,000. $10,000 gross if you have a couple of two or three or four kids and you want to buy a house. In a metro area where all the jobs are at, you're screwed. Your wife has to work, or vice versa. Does everybody agree with me on that?
Yep.
So what I'm saying today is unless you don't do something extraordinary today, something extraordinary, and you get lucky, you're going to barely keep in the middle class. You're going to be in debt. You're going to have mortgages, second mortgages, and third, or whatever on your house. You're going to have credit card debt. Loans off your cars, you're always going to be hanging on by your fingernails. Wait, anything bad happens, all you get sick, you're screwed. You're done. You're bankrupt. You have both people working, so you don't have someone watching the kids. And it's very uneconomic because there's no one home watching the kids, so then you have to hire help. Nobody wants to clean house, you hire that out, but you don't want to cook, so you're clean, so you're going out to restaurants, then you have to buy more clothes and maintain two cars and two bridge tolls and gas for two cars and all these other expenses that associate with a job with a second job. And there's been books written on this topic too that basically say that you're only going to net maybe 20% of the second worker's gross pay. So if you're making 10 grand a month, you might get it up to 12 by having the other person work full-time, which completely ruins the home life situation. Ask me how I know that one. All right, so that's the stopgap measure. That what people did is they started having everybody work, then they took second jobs, then they started doing consumer debt to a degree never before seen on the history of the planet, all in a vain attempt to try to struggle to maintain a middle-class existence, which is going to go further and further out of reach. I put gas in my car yesterday, it was $3.60 a gallon. So I said, well, we'll put in, you know, $30 worth, and it was like eight and a half gallons of gas. You know what I'm saying? Wait till it goes up to 5 or 6. China, they're building millions of cars a year, and all the cars are going to run on gas. And they're all going to be buying gas from the same places we want to buy our gas. What's going to happen to the price? It's going to go up. The top 1% is no longer optional. Top 1% is now critical. As far as the top 1% wage earners go, top 5% will be at least okay, and the top 10% makes it a struggle to maintain a middle class lifestyle without drastically cutting down your life and without living lower than your parents lived. So the top 1%, as I defined, is very simple. That's the rep who basically is doing everything different than the other 99%, by definition. If I did exactly the same things in the same ways as the other everybody else, where would I end up? I'd end up where everybody else went. Right? I take that road, I go where that road goes. You have to then look at everything else, everything everyone else is doing, and you have to start breaking rules. You have to start doing things different. You have to innovate. You have to think to do that. Okay, so I'm going to open this up for questions. Anybody have any questions or comments on the general topic?
Paul, I think you have nailed the current economic picture. I think it's very realistic. I think it accurately reflects the reality of the economy that we're in.
I appreciate that. That's Jim, right?
Yeah.
Well, that leads me to this. You have to do something unusual to stay in the top 1%. The income disparity is getting wider and wider. Once you hit a certain amount of success, the success tends to build on itself. Once you're no longer working for wages, but you have the money working for you, on your investments, and you have these second, you have like a second or a third source of income coming in, then you can make strides forward. But all of a sudden, it's amazing. Once you get to a certain tipping point, once you get past that 20, 25 grand a month that it takes to maintain a decent middle class lifestyle as we've become accustomed to, which is a nice car and a house and a vacation, just, you know, just a decent lifestyle. You're not rich yet. But once you get past that, you know what you can do? You can put almost all the money in the bank. It's, you know, after taxes. You don't need the money anymore. You can up your lifestyle if you want to be, you know, elaborate and work off your ego and have to have a bigger house because someone else has a bigger house, or buy a car, a ridiculous car. But if that's what you want to do, great. Or you can invest that money and buy yourself economic security and financial freedom. The problem is you can't, while you've been, it's like treading quicksand. You're running in quicksand. You can run as fast as you can, and all the while, you're literally sucking yourself down into the morass to die. You're actually creating a suction every time you do that, which pulls you down. And that's what the economy is like today. You need to take risks to get in the top 1%. The people in Europe, when they found themselves as peasants with no future, they were controlled by a lord, they were treated like dirt, you know, worse than dirt. They had a chance to escape and to go off to a faraway land and had farmland. They can go just start farming. They were farming anyway. They weren't getting nothing for it. They all left. I'm reading this book right now called Collapse. And I'm reading the chapters on the Norse, the Vikings. First they went to the Shetlands, then they went to the Faroes, then they went to the Iceland, then they went to Greenland, then they went to what they called Vinland, which was Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, where they had a settlement back in the late 900s, early 1000s. The reason they kept doing that is because there's too many of them and they didn't have an opportunity to own their own farm or to have some, so they kept moving and moving. They were living in Greenland in two little fjords that were habitable and the rest was covered with ice. It's an amazing story. They kept moving. In other words, Eric the Red, that was, you know, he got kicked out of Iceland a bunch of times. He kept killing people everywhere he goes. So they finally banished him from Ireland for Iceland for 3 years. And that's why he went. He was banished. So he said, I'm going to go off and explore this island. My ancestors told me they saw these islands out there, so I'm going to go find them. And he went out there and found them. He did something bold, and in his day, ended up comfortably in the top 1%. Why? Because he took risks. How would you like to go on one of those little shallow draft, little Viking ships, heading off across the North Atlantic, looking for an island, someone, some ancient ancestor said he saw once, and you have enough food in your boat to last X days, and that's, you're off going like that. Can you imagine that? And all I'm saying is that, hey, might be a good idea to pick up that phone once in a while. You know, dust that thing off, make a couple of calls. Oh, okay. Top 1%, take a little bit of a risk. This is a commission only, you know, independent sales position. So you're taking risks. That's why you're in the ballpark to even be talking about 1%. The only reason you guys are in on this call as an audience is because you're paying the price and you're taking the risk to deserve to hear about the top 1%. The other 90% of people are sheep in the pastures. Bah, bah. Okay? That's where they're at right now. They're off their 9-to-5 jobs, getting paid by the hour, getting paid by the salary. Guaranteed poverty. That's what a salary is. A salary is guaranteed poverty. Let's say I gave you $5,000 a month or $6,000 a month or even $8,000 a month. That's $64,000 a year. What the hell are you going to do with $64,000 a year? You know what I mean? You better hope you married a lawyer or so successful, because a lot of lawyers don't make anything anyway. So you don't even have a hope of being in the top 1% if you're on a salary. The only way most people are going to do it is they're going to take a profession and run with it. Be a medical, you know, be a surgeon, high-level corporate attorney. You know what I mean? And that's harder and harder to do with all the competition. Very difficult. But some of those guys make it. Some of them make it up the corporate ladders or they own their own business, which in effect is what this is like. This is the easiest way for someone off the street, anybody can walk in off the street with reason, into one of these kind of positions, listen to the training and learn it, and end up in the top 1% wage earner in the whole country and actually far surpass that without a PhD, without a graduate degree, without anybody licensing them, without necessarily having to have 20 years experience. I think that's an amazing thing. It's almost like the idea that anybody from Europe could have come to America and made a living and made a, you know, took a crack at it. They had no entrance requirement. Anybody was given a chance. Just totally ignorant people. No educations, nothing. We're allowed to come over here and do this. This is one of the last bastions of freedom in America, are these kind of opportunities. And very few people will ever consider doing it. When I finally bailed out of Detroit, I had my degrees. I moved out to Oregon, me and my wife, she's a nurse, and we were working out there. She's a nurse now, is working on the tracks. And we were making okay money. But, you know, I wasn't working to get anywhere. So I saw this ad in a newspaper. It goes, you know, nurses wanted in Saudi Arabia. I go, hey, what do you think of this? We should do this. She says, I don't know, okay. So I said, all right, send me a resume. 3 days later, they call up, say, yeah, we'll take you. We got a job opening in Saudi at a National Guard base north of Jeddah. I said, well, let's see what else is out there while we're at. So we looked in the nursing journal, a bunch of ads. We noticed them. So call another one. AMI Hospital, Al Baha, Saudi Arabia, a little village up in the middle of nowhere. That one sounded even better because it wasn't up in the desert. It was in the high mountains. The climate was really nice. 2 weeks later, I was in Saudi Arabia. They said, well, if you're going to do this, we need to do it right now. Here's what you need to do. We FedExed the resumes. They said, okay, here you go. They actually gave us some cash. a stipend. They sent us first-class air class fare. When I was leaving the house, the moving truck came in and was packing my stuff. I couldn't even have time to pack. I had one car, sold it. We're on a plane, went to Michigan, visited family, and we're off for 2 years in Saudi Arabia. I was in my 20s, late 20s. Everybody told me, what are you, nuts? You're going to get killed. There's Arab and the Israelis are fighting all the time. I go, that's 1,200 miles away. That's like saying they're fighting in Guatemala. So what? What does that have to do with Saudi Arabia, right? But I took a risk, and I went there, and I was there for 2 years. When I came back, I had 100 grand in cash. I saved 95% of my gross pay because there's no income tax, no state tax, no sales tax. There was no tax. I had a free condo. They upgraded me to a condo because we both got promotions as soon as we got there. I had subsidized meals. So I banked 95% of my gross pay. It was wire transferred to a bank in Michigan. I'm going to repeat that. For 2 years, 95% of my gross pay was my wife's too. It was wire transferred to a bank account in Michigan. And we had 12 weeks off of your vacation, and we took 4 of those weeks, flew to Heathrow. They gave us first-class airfare to Portland, Oregon. It was $5,000. I took that $5,000 and had a month's vacation with the $5,000 they gave me, and I still had a month's worth of wages, so I was being paid that whole time. And I went to London, drove. I put 3,600 miles on a rental car going around London, Scotland, and Wales. Went to Aberystwyth, Wales. Went up to Cambridge and Oxford, saw Land's End, saw the Stonehenge, went up to, what's it called, up in Scotland. Beautiful little town, I forget the off the top of my head, but anyway. And I still had 8 weeks paid vacation left. So the second trip we did, we went to Switzerland and, you know, hit Liechtenstein. That was good for a couple hours. That was fun. I almost fell asleep, I would have missed it. But we went over there, went to Jungfrau, took that little train up through the tunnels, 17,000, you know, we were at 14,000 feet. I got altitude sickness up there. And we were living at 7,800 feet. Never got above 75 degrees. They were step farming. It actually had rain in the cold season. It was really nice up there. That's why they had the summer capital in Taif, which is just north of there, before you'd done the escarpment down in Jeddah, which is the main city. But anyway, so I never was able to go to Europe on a European vacation. I was just out of school. She was just out of nursing school. We were just getting our first jobs. We were making, you know, just barely making any money. So there we are, getting all this money, had big piles of money. We're traveling all around Europe. We came back. I had 4 associate degrees. I came back, and I went to Colorado State. I bought a house. We had a kid. I bought a house, had a kid, and went to school full-time for 4 years without working, except for part-time to go to guard and reserve training. I didn't have enough money before to buy a house. I didn't have enough money to quit work and go to school. I didn't have enough money for her to afford to quit work and go and have a kid. All three of which we did because we spent 2 years in Saudi Arabia. That was a risk. Do you understand what it took for me to get a gain on things? Do you guys like that little story?
Absolutely.
All I did was take a job that was in Saudi Arabia. Very, you know, it's a very bizarre culture, a very strict culture. You know, the nice part is the women have to walk 10 steps behind me. Now, they didn't really apply that to Westerners, but I told my wife it did, and I made her walk 10 steps behind me. She's okay, because she didn't know, because I read all the books. She didn't, you know, I thought that was pretty funny. And how are you doing back there? Now, remember, stay back there, 10 feet, 10 steps behind me. Can't walk next to me. Yeah. She didn't find out for years later all the things that I told her she had to do. Like, men aren't allowed to clean the house in Saudi Arabia, so you have to clean the house. If they find out, we'll go to jail. So I made her clean the house, do all the housework. That was just the beginning. You guys like that?
Yep. Good story.
Right. The idea being is I found out kind of fast, and then I said, beyond that, I went to school, went to grad school, I switched over to sales, and then like sales, I like technology. I want to do both, but I run into commission, just commission, and I have my own businesses ever since. And I never had a salary job again because I hated working for other people. And the idea was that every time I've taken a risk, I've lost a lot of times. You don't always win, but long term, I look back right now, every gain that I ever made is because I took a risk. And maybe it's because when I went to see my dad at his company, above his head was this picture that says, it's a turtle. So behold the turtle. He only makes progress when his neck is out. And the whole time I visited my dad at work, I kept seeing this. It was a cartoon. It was a turtle. I was always a man. Look at that turtle. Big formal company, and then there's this thing over his desk. And that's what he did all the time. That's what I learned. It was risk.